It's 19:30 UTC on Wednesday, December 27th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Human rights activist Thomas Tole says in Bulawayo alone, thousands of people were turned away from registering for not having proper identity documents. He says the problem is linked to the Gukura Hundi.
That was Tore Shava reporting for VOA. We'll have more on that story and others coming up.
Good evening, I'm Mike Hore.
And I'm Chidonjere on VOA Zimbabwe Today.
On Thursday, former Army General Constantino Chiwenga and Defense Minister Kembo Mohadi will be sworn in as Zimbabwe's two vice presidents. The appointment was no surprise as President Emmerson Dambudzo Mnangagwa earlier named them to be the vice presidents of the ruling ZANU-PF party. Blessing Zulu from VOA Zimbabwe service is in Harare, and earlier today, our colleague Kate Pound-Dawson spoke with him about the significance of these appointments.
For Chiwenga, obviously, I think he's being rewarded for his role in staging a coup that the government says is not a coup, that the AU has said is not a coup. So Chiwenga was instrumental in dethroning former President Robert Mugabe. So I think he's being rewarded for that. Kembo Mohadi, you must remember that there was a unit accord in 1987 between ZANU and PF ZAPU, led by the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo. So what they do is when they select the two vice presidents, one is to come from Matabele land, the ZAPU stronghold. So it's to balance the ethnic divisions, if you like, in Zimbabwe. So you have a vice president always from Matabele land. So that is the Kembo Mohadi. And then you have another from Mashona land, Manika land, or wherever, usually from ZANU-PF. So this is where the two gentlemen are coming in.
Now, many had complained that the cabinet has no women and no younger adults. Picking these two gentlemen instead of selecting perhaps a woman or a younger person, could that be a problem for the president?
It is indeed problematic because remember, when the former First Lady Grace Mugabe was expelled from the party, that is what she was pushing for. Actually, ZANU-PF, before 2004, had that provision that one of the president, or at least one of the persons in the so-called presidium, was supposed to be a woman. And had former President Mugabe not been removed from power, I think he was going to implement that, because the Women's League of the party was pushing for the adoption of that resolution. There was actually another resolution to make sure that that is implemented. But now we see it's a boys' club, and women are not properly represented in cabinet or even in the top echelons of the party, except for Opamu Chinguri, who was actually selected to be the party chairperson, but not very influential.
Both men have long histories in the government and the party going back. They both had roles in the liberation struggle. What does the public think of them?
If you go to, you ask any ZANU-PF supporter, they are comfortable with Chiwenga, General Chiwenga. Each time his name was mentioned in the just ended party congress, he was receiving a standing ovation. In the party, they like him. But generally, Zimbabweans are just skeptical about the number of ex-military men in the government. Of course, the government is saying this is exactly what is happening in America. You have General Kelly and others, but the argument is that in America, at least they wait for a number of years, or there is a waiver from Congress before they start serving. But you have Chiwenga resigning like 2 weeks ago, and now he's the vice president. I think some people are not very happy with that. As for Mohadi, the question is he the most senior person in ZAPU? He is not. You know, he's just close to the vice president. So, I don't think he's one of the most popular politicians in Matabele land. So it might also present a problem for Mnangagwa.
That was VOA's Blessing Zulu in Harare speaking with Kate Pound-Dawson.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa's new vice presidents are getting a mixed reaction on social media today.
Mutumba Williams says, "I am happy with all their works. I see zero, no offense."
Lawrence says Chiwenga is the next president after ED.
And Brice Sendege says, terrible mistake he did, wrong move.
Eddie Semujo says, a man who can take off the whole of Mugabe's government and put them into the bin, you keep him close to you, otherwise you can't sleep.
Sichangi says, Mugabe had a good plan in place for ZANU-PF. Everything was staged and managed. The transition was fake.
Taurai Fitzpatrick says, the circle of old leaders continue.
In Zimbabwe, pro-democracy activists say two of the three Matabeleland provinces are among those with the lowest number of registered voters. They base their claims on a recently ended biometric registration drive. Some blame the situation on a lack of identity documents for many residents and on civil strife during the early years of independence. Correspondent Taurai Shaba has more.
The close of the fourth phase of the voter registration exercise showed Bulawayo province with over 220,000 people registered. That's barely half of the province's projected number of voters. In Matabeleland South Province, about 57% of the potential voters were registered, as compared to a little over 74% in Matabeleland North. Human rights activist Thomas Stole says in Bulawayo alone, thousands of people were turned away from registering for not having proper identity documents. He says the problem is linked to the Gukura Undi. That's the name for the civil strife in the early 80s, where North Korean-trained army units killed over 20,000 civilians in Matabeleland and parts of the Midlands provinces. Ipitule Maposa is the spokesperson for ZAPU, most of whose supporters were the target of the massacres. ZAPU and its leadership were considered at the time to be rivals of the ruling ZANU-PF party. Maposa says the state has never wanted to acknowledge or speak openly about the violence, though they are descendants of direct victims who do not have identity documents. He says the problem has become generational and can only be resolved when the authorities stop pretending their killings never occurred.
We have children of direct victims of the genocide who were born and grew up without any proper documentation from the birth certificate, the ID, and any other documentation. They since have had their own children who as well don't have the documentation that is required. So we have had a generation of citizens in Matabeleland and Midlands with no proper documentation, with no documentation whatsoever as a result of the Gukura Undi genocide. So the problem can only be solved by addressing the Gukura Undi issue.
Maposa's views were backed by a recent meeting in Bulawayo between civic society groups and some political parties, including the Movement for Democratic Change led by Morgan Tsvangirai. MDCT's Secretary General, Douglas Monzora, says the lack of legal documentation needs to be addressed urgently.
We went throughout the country to assess the progress of voter registration, and we came to the stage conclusion that in Matabeleland, we had the lowest voter turnout. And that showed us that there was something wrong or something not being done right in Matabeleland. We also discovered that quite a number of young people were not registering to vote, especially in Bulawayo.
Butler Tambo works with the Center for Public Engagement, a Bulawayo-based think tank. It's part of a coalition of civic organizations known as the Platform for Leveraging Democracy, Governance and Elections. He says the lack of identity documents is a serious problem, not only in Matabeleland, but in other regions as well, including the province of the capital, Harare. It showed only a little over half of all prospective voters had registered, an issue he blames in part on apathy.
You are finding people saying that the Matabeleland provinces have recorded lower figures because of the Gukura Undi effect, the fact that people do not necessarily have ID cards and the like. But I think there is a bigger problem more than just the issue of identity cards, because not everyone who doesn't have identity cards. There is a new crop of young people who have never registered to vote, who have never voted in their whole lives. But what we are finding is that I think there has been very little maybe voter education from the civic society organizations that has been done to entice the young population to go out and register and vote.
Annette Moyo is a young physician and civic activist. She says disinterest and low registration come from the failure of politicians to bring about meaningful change in the lives of ordinary Zimbabweans.
The statistics show that registration has been very poor in this region throughout the Blitz. And we've had a discussion and they alluded to the reasons for the poor registration, which are true issues to do with documentation, lack of proof of residence, defaced IDs, or even no IDs at all. But this only refers to those people who have gotten up from their homes to actually go to the registration booths. How about the ones that have stayed at home? I think that it's because people are discouraged. Here in Matabeleland, people have voted against ZANU-PF year after year. Each election has come and gone and they've voted for opposition parties and opposition candidates who have not delivered.
The Zimbabwean Election Support Network is a civic organization involved in advocacy for election reform and voter education. Its leaders cite another reason for the problem: the lack of adequate voter education, as well as disinformation and misinformation. Chairperson Andrew Makoni says his group's efforts to assist the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, in voter education have been hampered by lack of information from the electoral body.
Civic society organizations such as VEST have been complementing ZEC's effort in providing civic and voter education. We have specifically targeted regions where we believe that there have been low turnout, especially in the first and second phases of the blitz. However, the challenge has been the absence of disaggregated data by sex, age, and geographical location provided by ZEC. If we had this data, our work would have been targeted to these specific areas or specific demographics where there's been noticeable gaps.
According to ZEC, about 65% of the country's 7.2 million possible voters are registered. A mop-up registration exercise will begin January 5th and end on February 13th. ZEC is coming up with a new national voters roll. The move comes after allegations about the old one done by the Registrar General's office. Critics say it had too many problems, including the names of people who have been long dead. The new voters roll should be ready well ahead of the elections, expected to be held in July 2018. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shala.
A South African political analyst who monitors developments in the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, says the bloc has put itself in a difficult position because of its handling of Zimbabwe's developments. The military there in November forced the resignation of longtime President Robert Mugabe. SADC's constitution condemns any political changes that do not occur as a result of free and fair elections, yet it has embraced the military-backed Emmerson Mnangagwa as Zimbabwe's legitimate president, Darren Taylor reports.
Under cover of darkness, the army descends on the capital city. Soldiers seize control of key points. They place the president under house arrest. Soon after, he resigns and is replaced by the military's man.
The history books will say, actually, this was a military coup.
Vuyelwa Nkumanda specializes in international relations for the Political Economy Southern Africa Research Group in Johannesburg. She says the international community still won't refer to what's unfolded in Zimbabwe as a coup because its organizers cloaked it in respectability, saying they acted under the constitution. Nkumanda adds that the events that led to Emmerson Mnangagwa taking power were accepted worldwide because the target was President Robert Mugabe. He had become a pariah of the West because of alleged human rights violations and one of Africa's major headaches, as she puts it.
SADC honestly has had a terrible track record with Zimbabwe. It should have intervened around 2008 election. after the very same military that brought in Mnangagwa helped to keep Mugabe in power after following the...
There's strong evidence that Mugabe's ZANU-PF lost the 2008 polls to the Movement for Democratic Change, but the ruling party refused to accept defeat. SADC did little to pressure Mugabe to surrender power. In this context, says Nkumanda, SADC remains all too eager to accept anything that even vaguely resembles hope in Zimbabwe. She contrasts SADC's approach to Zimbabwe with its responses to unrest in Lesotho. In September, for example, assassins shot dead the chief of the Mountain Kingdom's army, bringing an immediate rebuke from SADC and South Africa.
Our defense minister came out and said, SADC and South Africa will not tolerate a military coup in its backyard. Whenever there's political instability, when it's such as military and the politics, then SADC jumps. So I hope with Zimbabwe they will do the same.
She wonders how SADC will act if there's an attempted coup in the region in the future, given its acceptance of the overthrow of Mugabe.
SADC needs to watch carefully and keep their eye on what's happening in Zimbabwe, because this could set a dangerous precedent for not only the region, but I think for the continent as well.
Nkumanda says the main lesson SADC should learn from what's happened in Zimbabwe is that it's much too passive.
You know, it's all good and well to say we want the people of country X to come up with a peaceful solution to this process, but going forward, what is the hard line that you are taking that you want to see happen?
But Nkumanda thinks SADC will do its best not to offend Mnangagwa because, like Mugabe, he's a hero of Zimbabwe's struggle for independence. She says if SADC proves unwilling to press the new president for reforms in Zimbabwe, it should begin to question its purpose.
SADC should not be afraid to hold Mnangagwa accountable for his promises. But at the same time, Zimbabweans themselves have lost faith in SADC because they've let them down on the Mugabe issue 2008.
Nkumanda says the removal of Mugabe offers SADC an opportunity to claim credibility or otherwise to sink into irrelevancy. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Chidondere in Washington, D.C. At 47 past the hour, we continue with news about Zimbabwe's momentous political change.
Liberian voters are waiting for their results of yesterday's runoff for president. It pits Senator and former sports star George Weah against Vice President Joseph Boakai. Reuters says the National Election Commission has asked both candidates and media not to declare victory ahead of the formal announcement of results later today. VOA's James Butty in Monrovia, he spoke about the wait for results with reporter William Eagle in Washington.
The National Elections Commission correlates the results from the fields from the different provinces. The election is conducting a tallying process under the watchful eye of the representatives from the two political parties that were in the runoff election. Also, the process is open to the general public. We were told by the Elections Commission officials that the Commission will hold a news conference sometime today. We do not know whether that is going to be today, but it's still time before the day is over. So they are supposed to have a news conference to give what probably will be their first preliminary official results from Tuesday's runoff election.
Also, have there been any commentary or word from international observers on how the elections went in their view?
A moment ago, a joint news conference by the Economic Committee of West Africa's Observer Mission, as well as the African Union Observer Mission, concluded. The African Union Observer Mission is led by Mr. Erastus Mwecha, who is the deputy chair of the African Union Commission. And the ECOWAS delegation is led by former president of Ghana, Mr. John Mahama. Mwecha of the African Union said that based on what they are told by their observers, that the process, the electoral process on Tuesday, was held in a peaceful and transparent manner, that all the polling places were open on time and peaceful. The voting process was done in a secret way as it's supposed to be. Polling centers, he said, their observers tell them that the polling centers were accessible. All voters, they say, they talked to who came to vote on Tuesday, told them that they were satisfied with the process. So, and the way the process opened and closed was also done properly, that they did not notice anyone complaining about the way the process went. The West African Community ECOWAS, Mr. Don Mahamat, also reported that both the African Union and the ECOWAS are meeting with the two representatives of the two parties, George Weah and Vice President Joseph Boakai, that they impress upon the two candidates to exercise restraint. In case the results come out, they must try to exercise restraint, because the way they behave will determine how their supporters will behave. The candidates assure them, he said, Mr. Mahamat said, they will support whatever results come out, provided that those results are fair and free. The ECOWAS delegation believes that the election was conducted in a free, fair, and transparent manner.
That was VOA's James Buddy in Monrovia. He was speaking with reporter William Eagle.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is struggling to deal with an influx of suspected South Sudanese rebels. The Congolese army has arrested at least 9 men so far, but family members and local refugee leaders say the men are legitimate refugees and should be released. Jason Patikin reports for VOA from the Congolese border town of Aba.
Since South Sudan's government captured a rebel base last week in the country's southwest, hundreds of refugees have poured into Democratic Republic of Congo. Some among them may be rebels, and the Congolese army, wary of conflict spilling into their nation, is arresting any suspected fighters. Refugees say innocent young men are being caught up in the crackdown. Grace Gaba, speaking from the border town of Aba, where some 30,000 refugees have taken shelter, says her brother, Joseph Moreau, was arrested by Congolese troops at a checkpoint last week and has been held ever since. She says, among us eight, only my brother was arrested. Maybe they think my brother is a soldier, but he is not a soldier. It is hard to say how many suspected rebels have been arrested so far. A Congolese government source not authorized to speak to media said 9 suspected rebels were in army custody as of last week. Local refugee leaders put the number at 17. Alexi Kabambi, who leads Congo's National Commission for Refugees in Aba, says those determined to be rebels are sent to a military base in the town of Dungu, where they may be extradited to South Sudan. Kabambi says even if rebels enter Congo unarmed and renounce their military allegiances, they cannot be granted refugee status. He says, once you've carried a weapon, you cannot be accorded refugee status as a civilian. Even if you're granted refugee status, if it is revealed you engaged in military activities in the past, your status can be revoked. Liwa Morris Taban, chairman of ABBA's South Sudanese refugee community, says anyone who enters Congo as a civilian should be allowed to register as a refugee, even if that person was previously a combatant.
If he's normal rebel or he's not even a soldier, he's a normal civilian, he has the right to be together with the rest in the side.
Researcher Alan Boswell says South Sudanese government soldiers who enter Congo can usually be sent home. But dealing with rebel fighters who cross the border is trickier.
Some want to be demobilized and be settled as refugees, but others will later want to return back and fight. It is essentially not possible to distinguish between who is ready to quit fighting and who is only there to recoup, recover, and return to combat.
As South Sudan's war continues, Congo will continue to struggle with combatants on both sides of the border. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Aba, Democratic Republic of Congo.
Some Kenyan opposition lawmakers have called on the government to investigate why 90% of students who took the 2017 secondary education exam failed. The Minister of Education maintains he is satisfied with the results. For VOA, Mohamed Youssef reports.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi, opposition legislator Caleb Amisi says Parliament needs to know why students failed.
Kenya National Examination Council, NEC, must be ordered to prepare and present a comprehensive report over this perceived mass failure, and an independent investigation should as well be incorporated. This should be conducted by some of the most credible auditing companies in Kenya.
In 2017, more than 600,000 students sought for secondary education exams. Only 10% scored high enough to enter a university. The results have sparked an uproar among parents, teachers and others concerned about the fate of the students and the quality of Kenya's education system. A key question is what caused the high failure rate. Was it the students, the people who taught them, the curriculum, or a speed-up grading process that saw educators plow through the exams in just 3 weeks? Mark Nyamita, an opposition lawmaker, says the problem needs to be fixed or millions of young Kenyans will be barred from higher education.
If this goes on in this government over the next 5 years, we're going to have a whooping 2.5 million plus people with their future shattered.
Some officials say the mass failure resulted from efforts to reduce cheating. In an interview with Citizen Television, Education Minister Fred Matiang'i hinted that might be true, saying the result reflects the real state of Kenyan education.
I am very satisfied with the results we've had in the last 2 years, 2016 and 2017, because we have lived a lie for such a long time. Time is here for us now to deal with the truth.
Calls are growing for a national conference to resolve the crisis and decide what to do about the students who fail the exams. The issue is expected to be discussed in the National Assembly in February. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A Cameroon court today freed Alain Patrice Kanan, a professor at New York State's Stony Brook University, from jail. Kanan was arrested December 7th as he was leaving Cameroon, his native country, to return to the U.S. where he's a citizen. He was accused of insulting the president in an article criticizing the government's handling of a protest in Cameroon's English-speaking region. Rights groups had protested his arrest. His lawyer, Emmanuel Sim, told journalists that the court had ordered the charges dropped. However, he said, the government seized Kanan's Cameroon passport and expelled him today.
Gucci gang, 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 Gucci gang. Spread their racks on new chain. My blood do. Ooh, I put a got name. I can't buy by where the rain. Rather go and buy ball man. Gucci gang, 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 Gucci gang. Spent their racks on new chain. My blood do. I can't buy no better way to rain. Rather go and buy ball man's. Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang.
Gucci gang.
Cost more than your rent.
It do.
Your mom still live in a tent. Yeah, still slaying with a jet.
Yeah.
Me and my grandma take meds. None of this be new to me.
Nope.
Look at my teeth called tutory.
Yeah.
Bought some red balls called allergies. Your airline, your company. Your breath smell like some cigarettes.
Cigarette.
I'd rather put the bitch in a project.
Yeah.
They kick me out of pain off. Now Lil Pump fly private jet.
Yeah.
Everybody scream WestJet. Lil Pump still sell that.
Yeah.
Hundred on wrist, sipping up. Lil bitch think a wet.
What?
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang.
Gucci gang.
Spread their racks on new chain. My blood do.
Yeah.
I flip the bitch, I forgot name. I can't buy by where the rain. Rather go and buy ball man.
Yeah.
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang,
Gucci gang,
Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang, Gucci gang,
Gucci gang.
Spent their racks on new chain. My blood dupe dupe dupe. I forgot guy name, yeah. I can't buy no kind of wet rain.
That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidonjere.
And I'm Mike Hove. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shana and Derele broadcast can be heard at 7 p.m., 2 p.m., 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7 VOA Ndebele and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.